This is Lewis Rogers, and you're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square specializes in tax advantage real estate investments locally and nationally. Invest in real estate locally, nationally, and invest on a tax advantage basis with Capital Square. I'm Lewis Rogers, founder and CEO of Capital Square. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing Whitson Huffman, Chief Strategy and Investment Officer at Capital Square. Whit, welcome to The Real Estate Show. Let's shift gears and talk about demographic shifts. What does the data tell us about the demographics and housing?
Yeah, you know, it's a little counterintuitive. There's, you know, 76 million people between the ages of 18 and 34, and they're entering the housing market typically as renters, right? Young people, just from a common sense perspective, they're not going to have the savings to accommodate a down payment right out of the gate. So those group of renters, that makes complete sense. But what's a little counterintuitive is there's almost 95 million people that are 55 and older, and those folks have the option of downsizing, and many of them are electing to rent. And so you have this kind of barbell of renters where you have young people who are entering the housing market and they're looking to rent, and empty nesters who are looking to downsize and be renters as well. And that's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on rents from the demand side of the equation.
And what's happening to home ownership, and how does that impact multifamily occupancy?
Home ownership's at a historic low. And clearly, right, if people aren't owning homes, they're renting apartments or houses. And so that's driving demand for newer apartments with modern amenities. I would also say that the amount of renters, specifically Gen Z renters, who believe they'll be renters for life is the highest that it's ever been. And I think that's a really positive tailwind as you think about rental housing in this country.
It's also counterintuitive that there's a housing shortage, correct?
It is. We're currently short about 797,000 units. And the shortfall of demand relative to new construction starts, we're short about 30% per year. So that number is expected to grow to be about 4.6 million housing units short by 2030.
Say that again.
4.6 million housing units short by 2030, which seems like a far way away today, but that's only 9 years out.
So there's a demand and a shortage. What does that do to rents?
It's a big driver of rents, and it's a big driver of occupancy.
Excellent. And is most of the housing in our country brand new, beautiful Class A apartments or something else?
Yeah, so most people are surprised, and I was too when I first came across the data. Over half of our apartment stock is older than 1980. And so when you think about the opportunity set that exists to renovate older communities, bring them to today's standards, improve the clubhouse, the gym, the pool area, it's a really deep opportunity set. But obviously, there's also a tremendous amount of demand for those new apartment communities just because there's not many of them on a relative basis.
Excellent. We're in the right place at the right time with the right investment strategy. So well done. Let us talk about something from before your time, inflation. The Treasury's pumping trillions of dollars into the economy. It looks like the first infrastructure bill is going to pass on a bipartisan basis, and there's more coming. What has history proven about multifamily housing during inflation?
So hard assets in general, right, have proven to be a good place to have your money during an inflationary environment. Obviously, real estate is a great example of a hard asset, but not all real estate is created equal. And multifamily is the beneficiary of having 1 year leases. So every year, right, the lease expires and the tenant either renews or a new resident is found. And that allows the landlord or the owner to reset that rent or recalibrate that rent every year. So if inflation's running, the rent can be adjusted to accommodate for that. And so it provides a really good hedge against inflation. And that is kind of counter to a long-term triple net lease, which generally has fixed annual rent escalations. Multifamily, right, 1 year leases, you're able to adjust and accommodate in any inflationary environment. And that really is a huge bonus of multifamily investing as we sit today with CPI projected to be about 5.5% this year.
So if we have a triple net lease, you say, well, I'm protected because the tenant pays the taxes, insurance, maintenance, and repairs, and I have 2% rent growth a year, but inflation's running at 5%, so I'm losing.
Right. So if inflation's running at 5% and you're only moving rents 2%, you run the risk of your dollar not being worth a dollar in the future. And so multifamily investing by having 1 year leases can help protect the value of your investment or the value of your dollar.
Heard an interesting one in today's investment committee, the greater of CPI or 2%. That's a nice provision. I think our investors would like that on a net lease basis.
I think so too.
Wonderful. Well, that wraps up multifamily. Let's talk about some of the more geeky technical topics, cap rates and interest rates. We've talked about multifamily properties being at the cornerstone of Capital Square's investment strategy. The firm also invests in long-term net leased medical and industrial properties. For the benefit of our audience, what is a cap rate? Why do we use the concept of cap rates?
So the cap rate is short for the capitalization rate, and that is essentially the ratio of the net operating income at the property to the investment cost or the purchase price. And so take one step deeper. If you took all of the revenues at the property and you subtracted out all of the expenses, not including debt, right? Some people like debt, some people don't. The cap rate doesn't contemplate debt. So it's all of your revenue minus all of your expenses. So things like payroll for the people to work at the property, utilities, marketing expenses, taxes, the fee for the property manager, right? So you deduct those expenses. That gets you to your net operating income. You then divide it by your purchase price. And so the cap rate provides a measuring stick across assets. So you can look at a market and say, well, that market is a 5 cap. Okay. So broadly speaking, multifamily prices at a 5. You can then look at a different market and say, well, this is a little bit more expensive. It has different demand drivers, but it prices more like a 4.5 cap. So it's more expensive. We can use this as a tool to compare and contrast our investments. And that is really one of the biggest benefits and ways that cap rates are used. The cap rate is built up and made of a couple different components, but cap rates are also often compared against the benchmark 10-year treasury rate, which is considered to be the risk-free rate.
Explain that. Why is it a risk-free rate?
Right. So it's a risk-free rate because conceptually, there's no better credit than that of the United States federal government. And so if you use that as the risk-free rate, it would be an investment in a 10-year treasury bond would be indicative of what investors would demand from a yield perspective for a risk-free investment, essentially, right? You're investing in a government bond and the government's going to pay you, and that's considered to be risk-free. And so when we look at multifamily investments, we're looking at that cap rate and we're looking at our yields on a spread relative to that risk-free rate. And so we want to make sure that that spread warrants the risk that we're taking for our multifamily investments.
Let's use an illustration. Let's say you're buying a really nice, brand new, Class A multifamily property in the Southeast for a whopping $100 million. $100 million property.
Yep.
And it has net operating income. What is net operating income?
Yeah, so net operating income is all of your revenues. So you take all of the rent, all of the other income. So that's going to be things like your amenity fees, reimbursements, things like that. Then you subtract out all of your expenses, right? So the cost for the on-site staff, the maintenance supervisors, janitorial services, you subtract utilities, real estate taxes, the property management fee, and that gets you to your net operating income.
Let's say the net operating income is a whopping $5 million.
Yep.
On that $100 million acquisition.
Yep.
I don't know numerators and denominators. Can you help us out here?
Yeah, sure. So then you would take $5 million divided by $100 million, your NOI divided by your purchase price, and that would be a 5% capitalization rate or a 5%.
A five cap.
A 5 cap.
And now if you start to layer in debt, what's the 10-year treasury today approximately?
1.16.
1.16. So I'm buying a 5 cap. But I can borrow at 1.16.
Mm-hmm.
What is that called?
Your borrowing rate is less than your capitalization rate. You essentially have positive financial leverage, which means it is accretive to the bottom line cash flow available for distribution. So you can put a 65% loan on your $100 million investment, right? So you have a $65 million loan. That means you only need to invest $35 million and then you're borrowing for less than the property can support. So conceptually, your yield or the dividend paid to the investor will be higher than the 5% cap rate that you're paying.
In terms of my cash flow, so the investors say, what's my cash flow? So I bought a 5 cap, that's 5% cash flow,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to leverage, say, 60% at 1.16%. What's my cash flow?
So it's going to depend on the spread the lender is charging above the 1.16%. So in today's environment, we would expect that the interest rate would be around 3%.
Right.
And so after other CapEx, other unique things, we would expect that your cash on cash would be somewhere between 5.75% and a 6% in today's interest rate environment. Obviously, completely dependent on how much leverage you take, exactly what that interest rate is. But the punchline is that the debt is accretive to investor returns, so they're able to get a higher percentage return on their investment.
Got it. So you could take a 5 cash flow and make it higher, maybe even 6%.
Exactly.
All the while the tenants are paying the rent and the rent is paying the mortgage.
Yep. And investors are building equity during the amortization period.
It's a wonderful story to build family wealth.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the federal agency lenders. I've heard of them, Fannie, Freddie, and HUD. Who are they? What are they? What do they do? Why do we care?
Yeah, they're agencies that were created to help preserve, protect, and encourage affordable housing. And so their mission is very simple, to help achieve those objectives. And so every year, they have a cap or a lending limit, and their objective is to go out and make loans up to that cap to help support that mission. So we at Capital Square, we buy brand new Class A top of market communities, but we also buy more workforce housing for the every average day renter. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac want to make sure that that type of housing is there and it's available for that workforce. And so they're able to lend at more attractive terms. So better leverage levels, lower interest rates, lower fees, those types of things to help accommodate and encourage that format of investing.
Tell us about affordability and how that factors into agency lending.
So they'll look at the area median income. They'll look at the rent levels at the property. And if you're 60% of average median income or AMI, or you're 40%, then you get a different tranche allocated to you for where you sit in terms of the lending spectrum. And the better you are inside of those AMI categories, the better your interest rate will be.
Is it meaningful?
It is meaningful. It can be 20, 30 basis points or 0.3%.
Okay. Well, that's
meaningful.
A 10-year loan on your $100 million property, that's what, a $60 million loan?
$60 million loan? Very meaningful.
Say 30 basis points, 0.30%?
Yep.
That's real money. How much is that a year? You're good with math.
On $60 million, not accounting for amortization, just 30 basis points would be about $20,000. Is that right?
It's a lot of money. It's good stuff. What about green energy with the agencies? I know they sometimes will incentivize us on an older property to make it more energy efficient.
Yes. So they want and encourage affordable energy. So you think of LED light bulbs. You think of low flow toilets, those types of things that encourage more green or impact investing, and you can get savings on your interest rate for doing that.
Meaningful savings?
Another 5-10 basis points. So again, very meaningful on a whole dollar basis.
That is great. And tell us about this manufactured housing thing in Florida that Capital Square invests in. Is that a bunch of old trailer parks out in the woods somewhere?
No, I think you're probably right. That's where folks' mind first goes. But manufactured housing are essentially homes that are constructed on site. They're actually, not mobile. When you think of mobile homes or trailer parks, the types of houses that we're buying are not mobile. And because of that, they really look and feel more like a regular neighborhood. In many instances, they have a porch, they've got a driveway, and it is one of the last bastions of naturally occurring affordable housing. So they really are central to the mission critical focus of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so because of that, we're able to get really attractive interest rates. From a market perspective, they're not really building these anymore. People don't want to see them built. There's a ton of resistance. And so because of that, the existing communities are very full. Many of them have wait lists, and the demand is very deep on a relative basis.
I think that's where the term NIMBYism came from for manufactured housing.
I think you're right. Not in my backyard.
Not in my backyard. These are very nice properties. They're landscaped. Some are, gated communities. They have clubhouses and pools. The shuffleboard is being converted to pickleball and other things, because old people are not old anymore. They're more like my age. Lastly, tell us about these buy for rent communities. That's kind of a new concept, a whole a whole community of homes, single family homes in a community that are all for rent.
Yeah, it's a focused strategy of ours. I'm glad you brought it up. So Build for Rent, or we call it BFR for short, is essentially a strategy that buys all contiguous single family homes. So 100, 200 single family homes that's on one tract of land. They're all next to each other. And they really operate like horizontal multifamily, right? So if you think about apartments being vertical in nature, this is really taking them and spreading them out and making it horizontal. And so given the shortage of available housing, the increased demand on the rental side of the equation, and the amount of renters today that believe they'll be renters forever, we are really leaning in and focusing on that BFR strategy as a way to help people transition from renting apartments to renting homes, whether it be because they're having a family, they want more space, whatever it might be.
Interesting. Are you working on any BFRs?
We are. We've got a bunch in the work, and it'll be very similar to our multifamily strategy in targeting southeastern markets.
That's exciting. More new products, more innovation. That is great. One last question. Tell us about solar. How does solar impact our future, and what do we plan to do with it?
Yeah, solar is a great example of renewable energy. And in many instances, the credit that backs the solar energy deals are investment grade or just sub-investment grade. And so because of that, we've been very focused on acquiring solar projects that have investment grade backers or off-takers, where we think there's arbitrage between the cost of investment grade debt and the yield that we can get off of those solar investments.
To understand it correctly, we would, Capital Square's investors would buy a solar farm that's leased to a power provider, basically an investment grade company, and would have basically a triple net lease for 15 or 20 or 30 years collecting rent.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so your tenant, right, is essentially the off-taker. And in many instances, it's the domestic or local power company. And most of them, or many of them, are investment grade. And so when we look at the yield or the dividend rate we can get off of those projects, and we look at where their debt is pricing or their bonds, we really like the spread between those two. And we think that there's good arbitrage there for our investors.
Well, that's very exciting. What about solar panels on the roofs of our apartment communities in the southeast where the sun shines?
Yeah, we're looking into it. We haven't executed on it yet, but it's something that we're actively working on. Obviously, the roofs are wasted space. They're unmonetized space, right? Nobody's paying rent for their roof. So we think it's a really great way to create a renewable energy resource for our properties, but also create incremental income that otherwise would not be there.
That's great. Well, thank you, Whitson Huffman. This is Lewis Rogers, and you're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Capital Square specializes in tax advantage real estate investments locally and nationally. Invest in real estate locally, nationally, and invest on a tax advantage basis with Capital Square. Join us next week for another insightful program on tax advantaged real estate investing. Capital Square was formed in 2012 to help investors with their Section 1031 tax deferred exchanges. Over time, Capital Square has become the second largest sponsor of 1031 exchange replacement property. Capital Square has grown to sponsor many other types of tax-advantaged real estate investments and is on track to acquire well over $1 billion of real estate this year for its investment programs. Capital Square has sponsored 101 investment offerings comprised of 132 individual properties across the nation for thousands of investors. That equates to well over $3 billion of real estate, and the portfolio is growing rapidly. Capital Square is best known for its Delaware Statutory Trust, or DST, offerings. Those are for real estate investors seeking tax deferral under Section 1031 of the Internal Revenue Code, my favorite section. Capital Square has a growing business in sponsoring Opportunity Zone funds. OZones are for investors seeking tax deferral and exclusion under the 2017 Opportunity Zone legislation. And recently, we launched Capital Square Apartment Real Estate Investment Trust, or REIT, for long-term investment in housing. An apartment REIT is acquiring Class A apartment communities in the southeast and Texas for stable income and capital appreciation. Also, Class B value-add apartments in the southeast and Texas for superior growth. And finally, other classes of housing, including manufactured housing and single-family build-for-rent communities. Capital Square focuses on diversification to help investors reduce risk from a concentrated investment by diversifying. Living in the sweet Virginia.
The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Louis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.